pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
I got a chance to sit down on the podcast today with Gavin Lang, who is the football and wrestling sports information director for Oklahoma State, and he was kind enough to come on and talk a little bit about the NCAA wrestling championships, as well as breaking down our brackets, talking a little football, and a few other things. So I hope you guys enjoy. Okay, Gavin Lang, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you coming on today.
Happy to be on with you.
Hey, I wanted to just talk to you a little bit, kind of let the listeners know. I know you went to San Diego State for your undergrad, and then ended up at Oklahoma State. Talk a little bit about kind of your journey, how you got from California to Oklahoma.
Sure. Well, I didn't even know that the field that I'm in, media relations, actually even existed until I got to college. I actually went to San Diego State as a baseball player. Things didn't work out there for me, but in the process of being on the baseball team, I actually met the people that do media relations. And, you know, and once I essentially got cut from the team, you know, the next best option was to work in athletics, and it was writing, something I've always been pretty good at, and I'm passionate about working with sports. So I joined up with the media relations office at San Diego State and worked there for 4 years. And then when I graduated, I was fortunate to get a internship at Indiana University in Bloomington, worked there for a couple of months, and then they had some staff issues, and I ended up getting promoted to basically being from an intern to being the football SID. And that kind of set my career and fast forward a little bit. After 3 years at Indiana, took a job at South Carolina as the football SID, and then came here to OSU. After 3 years at South Carolina, this is now, I just finished my fourth year at OSU. My wife's family lives in Shawnee, so OSU was a great place to come. And also the guy that I worked for, Kevin Clintworth, I worked with him at San Diego State, so it was a perfect fit. And we throw into the fact that OSU was really on the right track and things were going really positive. I mean, it would be attractive to most anybody. I'm just fortunate I'm the one that ended up in the seat that I'm in.
Yeah, for sure. Well, going back to San Diego State, was Tony Gwynn was he involved when you were playing baseball out there, or?
Yeah, Tony was around. He, by the time that I left my last 2 years at San Diego State, Tony Jr. was on the team.
Okay.
He is now, I believe, with the Dodgers this year. He spent most of his career with the Brewers, and he went to the Padres last year. I think he had a little bit of a disappointing season with them, and then now he's with the Dodgers this year. But Tony was around. He's a great guy. You know, he was the people that you're really lucky to be around when you were around that program. You know, Tony, the stadium is named Tony Gwynn Stadium out there. And what ended up happening is, you know, they named the stadium after him before they made him the head coach. And so, it's a little bit awkward for him, you know, to go back there and be the head coach. I know I went back to visit with him one summer. I think it was probably 2003 or something like that. And he had just been named the head coach, and I went back there to go visit with him, and he said that, you know, it's kind of a, you know, he doesn't want to use it in recruiting almost, you know, because it seems like he's the center of attention, and that's something that not only does he doesn't want it now, he's never wanted it before.
Yeah, that is weird that they named that'd be like OSU naming, you know, Gallagher, I have a Brooks Thompson Court or Bill Self Court or something before. That's really odd that they did that.
Basically, the whole deal there was that the Padres owner is the one that essentially rebuilt the stadium. The stadium was awful there. They had a terrible, terrible baseball facility until the Padres owner, John Morris, kicked in all the money for it. And I want to say he put down $4.5 million, $5 million or so to build that stadium up. And said the only way that he would do that would be if they named it Tony Gwynn Stadium.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. That's really cool. We said you're at Indiana. I've heard a lot about their sports journalism program. Do they have a pretty good sports journalism program there?
Yes, their student paper is actually the best one that I've ever been around. And granted, I've only been at four schools, but it's the best one that I've ever seen in action. Like, for example, to even get your name on a story in the student paper there, which is the Indiana Daily Student, you had to have quotes from three different sources just to get your name on a story. So it's like, if you wrote a story, but you only had quote from one or two people, then it would just say from staff reports. And so they're pretty hardcore about it. And, but yeah, I mean, I thought that they did things great. They wore us out sometimes because it was never easy. You always had to scrounge up a bunch of people for them. But in the end, it was definitely what was in the best interest of the students. And I mean, that's what we're all in it for anyway. Anyone who works on a college campus that doesn't think that they're here to help students is in it for the wrong reason.
Right, right. Now, when you got to Oklahoma State, were you getting there? I guess you said 4 years ago. So you ended up in the kind of in the football and wrestling portion of the athletic department. Did you have a choice there? Or were you kind of placed there? How did that work?
No, I was brought here mainly to be the football SID.
Okay.
The way that it shook out with wrestling is there was nobody there at the time. There was a guy that was doing it, and that was his main sport. That was the biggest thing that he was doing. But it probably could have been done a little bit better. And by the time I got here, and if they're going to try and shuffle the staff around, because Kevin Clintworth is the one that brought me in, and he had just been here for a year before me. So I was kind of his first hire, and I joined a staff of guys that are great guys. And Mike Noteware, who does men's basketball, and Ryan Cameron does women's basketball. Wade McWhorter does baseball. Fortunate to join a great staff of guys. But anyway, long story short is there is nobody doing wrestling now. And I was the logical person to do it because I was the only one that didn't have a winter sport. And so, I mean, I went into John Smith's office. I mean, it was part of my interview. I went in there and I said, look, coach, I'll be honest. I don't know wrestling, but I know two things. Oklahoma State is the best and you're a legend. Kind of looked at me and pointed and was like, I like you. The rest of it kind of figures itself out. I just, I've been lucky to have some people that did know wrestling that were able to coach me up. And I still don't claim to be an expert on it, but I certainly know enough to talk about it with confidence.
Well, yeah, I mean, looking back to probably if you could have picked two sports looking ahead 4 years that you would have wanted to be involved in, it'd be football and wrestling with the amount of success that both of those have had.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's been a blast. With wrestling, it's almost like, you finish fourth in the country and it's like, how'd you do? Oh, we did good, not great. whereas, with football, you feel like you get to enjoy the journey maybe a little bit better because I think Oklahoma State people everywhere are just kind of enjoying the process here. I mean, I still maintain that my most fun season I've had here was the 2009 season. Everybody always, people complain about it, because the numbers weren't so great and everything. But that team, minus Dez Bryant and pretty much minus Kendall Hunter all year, and with a dinged up Zach Robinson, had no business winning 9 games.
No, not at all.
So that was maybe the most rewarding. And, people dog Coach Gundy because they say, the play calling wasn't good or whatever. No, that's not what the issue was. The issue was you had a quarterback that had basically his arm and his leg chopped off. When you take away Dez Bryant and Kendall Hunter, you take two first-team All-America skill guys out of any team's lineup, and it's not going to look the same.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, people look at that season and say, to go from preseason number 8 or 9 or whatever it was to 9-3 overall and going to the Cotton Bowl is a disappointment, but it's not. Like you said, after the first three games, you're down basically 2.5 of your top three guys, and then you go 9-3 from there out, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. That team had no business winning 9 games. Like, given the circumstances and everything, that was probably a 6 or 7 win team.
Yeah.
What drove that boat was it was a bunch of seniors on the team that took pride in what they were doing. The group of Zach Robinson and Keith Toston and Russell Okung and those guys that were, the leaders
right.
of that team really led. And the locker room dynamic was tremendous. And it's been, really since 2008 until now, the locker room is a great place to be right now for Cowboy football. And it shows, there was that 2009 team faced so much adversity. but they just kept winning. And that's what planted the seeds for this 0-10 team this last year, because, I mean, yeah, you had all the turnover, but the mindset was already instilled, you know, that this team could do things. And I mean, at this point, you just say the sky's the limit. I mean, of course, there's always circumstances you never know, but I mean, boy, if we can keep everybody healthy, awful excited about this 2011 season.
Well, do you think something like locker room cohesiveness creates momentum as you go throughout the years? Does it kind of build upon itself as you're moving along?
Yeah, I mean, because it becomes the cowboy way of doing things. You know, it's no longer about, you know, a couple individuals that are leaders on the team as much as it is about, we're Oklahoma State and this is our identity. We do things the right way every day. We compete in practice every day. We compete in the weight room every day. And, you know, that's why when you hit some adversity, you're able to overcome those things, because it just becomes your way. It's not, oh, we've got a couple guys that we look to.
So is that cowboy way, is that kind of a reflection of Coach Gundy's personality, or how does he fit in as far as instilling that in the younger guys and in the program as a whole?
I think it's, you know, pretty much everything, you know, the credit, most of the credit should go to the coaches for discipline types of things. And, you know, but at the same time, when guys police themselves, that's when you really have the makings of a good team.
Yeah.
You know, and Coach Gundy certainly instills that. They've got like a leadership group of guys, you know, that are from different position groups and different ages, you know, from senior, junior, sophomore, freshman, so forth. That's kind of like the leadership council. I mean, it's just right now, it's just humming. You know, it's the team is just in a good place. And Coach Gundy certainly deserves credit for organizing it, but the players deserve a ton of the credit for executing it and making it happen.
Yeah. Well, let's, Gavin, let's go ahead and go into some of the wrestling stuff. You went to Philadelphia for the NCAA championships.
Yeah.
OSU finished fourth.
Mm-hmm.
And if, I guess my question, if they played that, or if they redid that tournament 10 times, how many times do you think OSU would win? Did they just wrestle poorly, or what was the factors for them finishing as low as they did?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's so many different things that can happen during the course of a tournament like that. I think if they did it 10 times, what would happen out of the 10? I would think, OSU maybe wins it 3 out of the 10.
Okay.
You know, maybe 2 out of the 10, because Oklahoma State, Cornell, Penn State, and Iowa are pretty equal.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening in Penn State's case is Penn State won almost all of its head-to-head matchups with Cornell. You know, Cornell did very well also. They lose all their guys, and they're about to go away back into, drift back. I don't want to say drift into oblivion, but they're going to. You know, they're going to have some work to do to get back to where they are now. You know, they lose all their guys. And so really the next few years are shaping up to be Penn State, Oklahoma State, and Iowa. I think Iowa would be there's a gap between Penn State and then OSU, Iowa. Even though Iowa finished ahead of OSU, I'm not convinced. I think if you did it to 10 times, I think maybe 8 times out of that 10, OSU finishes ahead of Iowa.
Right. Talking about Penn State, they've got, for the listeners who don't know, Cale Sanderson is actually the coach there now. He was an undefeated collegiate wrestler. Do you think that is he building something there? I mean, obviously they won a national title for the first time, I think, since 1953 or 54 or something. Is he building a dynasty there? What's he doing there?
Too much parity in wrestling for any one school to just hold a stranglehold. Because the thing is, wrestling is one of those sports where you only have 9.9 scholarships for 35 guys on your roster. So just because you're the best crop of recruits doesn't necessarily mean that you're all going to go to Oklahoma State or Iowa or Penn State. Because, you know, would you rather be on books and meals at Iowa, or would you rather have a full ride at Iowa State? You know, so like that's how it happens a lot, because some kids, you know, the coaches have to manipulate the numbers a little bit differently just to make all their situations work. So is he building a dynasty? I don't think so. Was Penn State good before him? Yes. You know, this isn't completely out of left field, them winning, but he brought in a tremendous recruiting class. But the thing is, though, you can't really, once you bring in a class like that, it's hard to bring in multiple classes because of your money's tied up. You know, your scholarship money is tied up in all those guys. So really the only way to, you know, further strengthen what they've got more, a whole lot more than what they already have, is to have guys that are getting a ton of academic aid. You know, and we brought in the number one recruiting class in the nation a couple of years ago, and those were the guys that were redshirt freshmen competing this year, like Chris Perry and some of those guys. I'm convinced that Chris Perry is going to be an absolute bear here next year.
Well, how does John Smith handle the scholarship issue? Does he, I mean, is Oklahoma State a sell whether or not you can get a full scholarship, or how does he do that?
Well, I mean, he just like every other coach. I mean, you've got just the 9.9. You've got to figure out what you want to do, what's right for you. I mean, we've got, you know, Alan Gelagaya, who didn't wrestle at all this year for his varsity, to the Russian kid everyone calls Z. You know, he never even saw the mat this year in varsity action. You know, there's a lot of scholarship money tied up in him because he's from Russia. You know, you got to bring a guy like that in. And it's really not a problem. I think you look back on it, I don't think you change anything because, you know, thought in your heart of hearts, you're hoping that he'd be back for Big 12 and NCAA. But the reality is that he just wasn't ready. I mean, he went under the knife during the course of the season and everything. And it just, you know, didn't work out for him. You're better off trotting Blake Rocholt out there.
Well, how many guys does OSU currently have on full scholarship in wrestling?
Z may be the only one.
Okay. Okay. So Coach Smith splits it up, you know, and does what he can with the 9.9.
And that's the understanding among the athletes in the sport. You know, that's because everybody's in the same situation. You want your team to be good. You know, so there's, you know, most everybody, I don't know. If any of them beyond the are getting any, you know, a full type of ride.
Right. It seems like it's kind of the same deal with like baseball. Cause I think there's 11.2, I want to say there, for 35 spots. And it's, you know, it's pretty much understood that very, very few people, unless you're going to be a top draft pick, you're not getting a full scholarship in baseball.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that, I mean, that's just how it is. And it's, I mean, like, I'm glad that you actually mentioned baseball because that's, you know, all sports, all schools have that same issue going on. You know, and you got to figure it out. Each coach has got to figure it out because just the numbers aren't going to work. You know, just in baseball, figure it this way. There's, you know, nine guys on the field. And if you've got your three starting pitchers, you know, that's, you know, an additional 10, 11, and, you know, maybe your midweek pitcher, 12, that's, you know, 12 guys that would be your, you know, your regular lineup. And if you got less than 12 scholarships, do the math. Not everyone's getting it. And then you haven't even talked about the backups.
Right.
You know, in wrestling, you got 10 starters, 9.9 scholarships. It's impossible to get everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that's something that college coaches don't really get enough credit for in the, you know, in the non-football sports, that not only are they coaching these teams, but they're balancing, you know, it really is a juggling act to balance the scholarships.
You're absolutely right.
Well, talking about Jordan Oliver, he obviously won the national championship. Let's say 5 years down the road, how are we going to look at his season historically? You know, him going 29-0 and being the national champion. How does it fit in with Oklahoma State historically?
Well, I can tell you that those undefeated seasons don't grow on trees. You know, you've really done something. If you finish the season as an undefeated champ, you have done something. I mean, I kind of went through and I'm going through some of the cleanup stuff from this year, and he's already in the top 12 in OSU history for career winning percentage, sitting at 61-4 overall. He had 83% of his season wins this year were bonus points, which is the fifth highest single season mark in OSU history, putting him right in between John Smith and Kenny Monday, who are two of the legends here. I mean, he turned in one of the best seasons in OSU history. And pretty much anytime you're an undefeated champ, you're going to be on that short list for best seasons of all time. I mean, is he a huge pinner? No, he's not. But, man, he makes guys look silly.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Glad he's on our team, by the way.
Yeah, me too. Well, he, like you said, he's 61-4. What's his ceiling the next 2 years? How high can he go? Can he, I mean, when will he lose again? Will he, I mean, what are we looking at as far as his ceiling over the rest of his college career?
Yeah, that's kind of up to him. You know, if he stays on the track that he's on, you know, there's no reason to think that, I mean, he's the guy to beat. until someone beats him, you know, he's the guy to beat. So people have to come after him. But, you know, wrestling is one of those sports. We saw it at the NCAA championships with Clayton Foster. You know, Clayton Foster was leading the kid 5-1 in the title bout. But all it takes is a split second. You get pinned and the match is over. It doesn't matter what the score is.
Was that, you know, so, talking about Clayton Foster, was that just a technical error that he made whenever he got, when he got pinned in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, you hate to, you know, point fingers or anything like that, but he probably put himself in a tough situation, and the kid from Kent State made the most of it. I mean, your heart breaks for Clayton because he earned the right to be in the position that he was in. I mean, we can't forget he was undefeated also, and we're looking at being an undefeated NCAA champion. So he went from, you know, also turning in one of the best seasons in school history to having, just leaving with a bitter, bitter taste in his mouth.
Well, it really was tough to watch because you're watching the match and you're pretty much saying, you know, he's in control. He's kind of doing what he wants, and he's really just trying to get out of the second round. And all of a sudden he's on his back and you're like, well, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And that's just how it could happen, you know, and it could happen against anybody. It doesn't take somebody like the kid from Kent State who's, you know, wrestling for the championship to pull that off. I mean, you make one mistake and, you know, things can go south on you in wrestling. It's funny. It's just the nature of the sport. You know, people talk about it, but personally for me, again, as someone who's only been around wrestling now for 4 seasons, that's the first time I've seen that happen live, where one guy was just dominating and then, you know, boom, split second and he's on his back and it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, talking about another guy that was at the NCAA championships, Anthony Robles for Arizona State. The 120, I think he's 125 pounder.
How about him?
For the listeners who don't follow wrestling, he's a wrestler. He has one leg. He won the national title. I think there's been a lot of argument in the media lately of whether or not it's an advantage or a disadvantage to only have one leg, which seems absurd when you say it. But it really gives him kind of a benefit in that he can have more upper body strength without that leg. What do you see that as, an advantage or a disadvantage for him?
Well, it's definitely an advantage, but man, I mean, it's an advantage for him in the sport. And, you know, I don't think it's an unfair advantage, you know, cause he's got inherent disadvantages also. The way that he makes it work is he knows how to play it to his advantage. I mean, that's a guy that has faced clearly more physical adversity than anybody else in the bracket, but he finds a way to make it work. I mean, you got to reward a guy like that. You know, I could tell you that the people in our wrestling room have nothing but respect for him. We've seen him head to head a couple times with Oklahoma State. I think he wrestled against Obi Blanc a couple years ago, and he wrestled Chris Nottie last year, I believe twice, and he won every time. But you know, you can't help but respect a guy like that because what he's overcome, and he turned what some people would say is a negative and turned it into a positive, and really found a way to motivate and be a good example for a lot of people. Guys like Anthony Robles, that's what's right with college sports.
Yeah, and it was, you know, my family's sitting there watching, and It's such an emotional moment because there's, you know, obviously the kid's got one leg and his family's there and the crowd's going crazy and the atmosphere's, you know, phenomenal, and he's just won the national title. What was the, I guess for a lot of listeners who haven't been to a wrestling national championship, what's the atmosphere like? Is it like a Final Four? Is it like a football game? What's the atmosphere there?
It's funky. I guess if I had to describe it in a word, I've been to two Final Fours, including one when I was at Indiana, when we beat OU in the semifinals and then lost to Maryland in the championship game.
That was
Final
Four. That was the 02. That was the 02 game, national championship.
Yep, that is correct.
Okay.
I was there for that one. And then I was also there just as a fan in 06 when it was in Atlanta, which is only a couple hours away from Columbia, South Carolina, which is where I was living at that time. And a bowl game is different too, because a bowl game is almost like a celebration of your team and its season. You know, for the fans, certainly, you know, you hang around and, I mean, fans are thrilled to be there. And I mean, it's, you know, you kind of, because you have a month in between the time that you've played your last game and the time you get to a bowl game, it's almost more of a, like a coronation type of thing for a season, you know, and obviously everybody wants to win the bowl game, but there's always such a good vibe, you know, among the fans and the team and everything in a bowl. It's always usually pretty relaxed.
Yeah.
NCAA wrestling is, you know, you got fans from all the different teams that are there. And so you get powerhouse teams like Iowa and Oklahoma State and so forth. And fans, the first day, everyone's rooting for their team. But as it goes, the teams that are going to be standing there at the end, their fans will start rooting against other teams. You know, and wrestling is kind of one of those sports where it's not just constant cheering and loud and noisy and everything. It's, you know, it'll get quiet and then there's some sort of takedown or something and then everybody goes crazy. And if there's a pin, the place goes nuts. You know, but when a guy like Robles is wrestling, team affiliation goes out the window. Everyone just roots for him.
Yeah.
Except for the fans of whatever team it is that he's wrestling against at that particular time. And then usually as soon as the match is over, it's a standing ovation from everybody. You know, so he's, I mean, it's a absolute blast to watch a guy like that. I mean, it's, you know, NCAA first and second rounds of basketball maybe is kind of like that, you know, where teams, you know, they're there to cheer on their own team, but let's say you don't want to face the higher seed team that's in the other game, so you cheer for the lower seeded team.
Right.
You know, so that way your team has got the better draw as you go forward. Speaking of, how's your bracket doing?
Well, it's not good. The first and second rounds were not good. I still have seven of my eight Elite Eight teams, and I've got all my Final Four teams in it. I have your Aztecs falling in Anaheim. I think it's in Anaheim against the Dukies to go to the Final Four. But I mean, it's, you know, it's middle of the road. What's yours looking like?
Well, actually, I did two brackets this year. I did one that was like a straight up bracket where I sat there and, you know, kind of I went with my gut, or then maybe I'll look up a couple stats here or there to try and, you know, split the tough matchups. I'm looking at it here. I'm doing awful in both of these two brackets, by the way, so for the record. But I really struggled in the Southwest and the Southeast regions. I only got one team alive in both of those combined. So I've got none in the Southwest and one in the Southeast. I've got in the West, three of the four teams in the West and three of the four teams in the East. Then the second bracket that I did was I literally flipped a coin for every game and said, if it's heads, the higher seed advances. If it's tails, the lower seed advances.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I saw that and you kind of relayed it a little bit over Twitter. And did you have Michigan in the finals?
I had Michigan over Texas A&M in the national championship game. Purely off coin flip. There was no rhyme or reason. It was all it was just, you know, luck of the draw. I will say this, the coin flip did have Morehead State beating Louisville.
That's solid.
And there was another one too. Didn't quite advance Wofford to the Elite Eight like the coin flip said it would. there was another ridiculous one that was somewhere. Or, yes, Boston U beating Kansas, yeah. You know, on the coin flip. But it's funny, the coin flip bracket actually was 4-4 in the East region on the first day, or on, you know, the first round. 4-4 in the West region on the second in the first round, and it did better than my actual, you know, reasoning and statistical breakdown of the Southeast region. I got the coin flip bracket was 4-4. Me in real life was 3-5. So that's a taste of humble pie for you right there.
Yeah, well, I'm actually considering just not filling out a bracket anymore, and I know that's kind of anti college athletics, but you go into these games and now I've got, you know, you've got Butler and I want them to win it all, but I picked Wisconsin in my bracket to go to the Final Four. So I don't know who I'm rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I have a hard time with Wisconsin because it seems like they always let me down. You know, they'll lose in the second round or so. And like, they're one of those teams that just brutal to watch them play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's atrocious, and I feel the same way about Villanova. You know, I love Jay Wright, and I've always got him going deep in the tournament. And they lose these stupid first and second round games, and you're just like, what are they doing? You know, and I don't know. It's a mess. But I'm looking forward to the games tonight. How do you feel about San Diego State going up against Kemba Walker and UConn?
You know, Kemba's going to be a handful no matter who they play. San Diego State, this is going to be the first team that they've played that's got athletes like what SDSU has.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately San Diego State's undoing would be a team that pressures them and pressures the point guard. That seems to be, I've seen them play three times now this year, and it seems as if the if teams don't pressure them, they're tough to beat because they're so long and that they get set up in the, it's almost like the Lakers, you know, but like a college version of the Lakers. They've got so many long athletes that are capable of doing different things, like how Lamar Odom and Pau Gasol are, and plus you got Bynum in there. the Aztecs are kind of like it. They got long guys that can make things happen. They're versatile. But UConn has got guys like that too. And so it'll be interesting to see how they match up. I got the Aztecs beating them. And what it came down to for me was the fact that the game's being played in Anaheim. You know, I think it's going to be a close game, but I think just the fact that the game is being played, you know, an hour away from their campus, and their fan support this year has been tremendous. I don't know if you've seen any of their games from home, but I mean, they sold out every game this year, and they their student section is just electric, which is hard for me to head around. I mean, I in an Oklahoma State setting, I guess people don't want to hear it, but for when I was in college, my last 2 years, it was they were 4-23 and 5-22, and a good crowd was if they drew 3,000 fans.
Wow.
And now they draw routinely. The arena seats 12,414, and they sold out every home game this year.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, I watched them play against BYU in the conference championship, and I mean, they were impressive. You know, BYU is kind of a weird team, and I think it's even though they beat them twice, it's kind of a bad matchup for BYU. And I was blown away, like you said, by how athletic San Diego State is. And the one thing that would worry me about them tonight is I don't know. I mean, they've got Kawhi Leonard, but I don't know if they've got somebody that can match Kemba if it kind of gets into a one-on-one shootout.
No, they don't have anybody. They're not built around that. And that's why, you know, Jimmer was, that, and the fact that they lost to BYU twice and that they've played BYU three times though works in their favor because they've seen a guy like that in Jimmer. I mean, Kemba's style is different than Jimmer's is, but they know how to play against a team that has one guy that can bury you. You know, they tried a few different things. It's funny because I watched them when they played the first game in Provo and Jimmer just killed them. And then the second game, they clearly game planned to stop Jimmer, but then it was the other guys because they were all just left wide open. The rotations were slow. You know, everybody would collapse on Jimmer or double team out on Jimmer, and then he'd find whoever, and then, you know, fill in the blank other BYU player would make the shot that would be, you know, standing there wide open.
Yeah.
Then the third time, they just did a better job with limiting Jimmer's touches in the places, catches, like in the places where he would want to catch it. And that ended up making a difference. Now, I'm sure that they're going to have somewhat of a similar strategy against Kemba Walker. But again, different style of player. You don't have to worry about Kemba Walker stopping 40 feet out and shooting.
Right.
You know, which is what you do have to worry about with freaking Jimmer Fredette.
Well, it should be a fun night of college basketball. Well, Gavin, I really appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely have you on again to talk. I want to have you on kind of around the spring game, talk a little bit more about football as you get more heavily into that. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks, Gavin. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
Remember, you can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.pistolsfiringblog.com.